Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for tonight's conversation on Seattle's housing crisis, particularly as it's being experienced by people who are experiencing homelessness. My name is Davida Ingram, and I'm our Public Engagement Programs Manager at the Seattle Public Library, the Central Branch. I'd like to ask you to join me in thanking our community partners for tonight's program. It was made possible by Real Change, and also with support by KUOW. The film that we're presenting is by an Indianapolis-based director named Don Sawyer. Don is not here to join us tonight, but we do want to invite you to use social media to add commentary about the film that he can check out online. Later on, when we have our panel, it will be moderated by KUOW's Kate Walters. We also have three panelists tonight. We will have Buddy McArdle from Real Change, Anne Lozerfo from Columbia Legal Services, and Sally Bagshaw. Our programming through public engagement is made possible through the Seattle Public Library Foundation. So without further ado, we'll start the film. Again, after the film, we'll have a panel and then Q&A. Thank you. So we want to thank everybody for sticking around for our Q&A. Again, we weren't able to have the filmmaker Don Sawyer join us, but we do have three amazing panelists, and we'll bring up Kate Walters to introduce them. Thank you.
Thank you, Davida. My name is Kate Walters. I'm a producer at KUOW. It's a real pleasure for me to be involved tonight to help facilitate this discussion. So I'm going to ask our panelists to come on up and take a seat at the table here, and I'll introduce you to everybody. And while they're coming up, I know that the filmmakers can't be here, but how about a round of applause for those who made that film? So we have, as Davida said, a great panel here to talk to you tonight and sort of discuss some of the things that we just saw. Joining us is Buddy McArdle, who is a Real Change vendor. He works with Real Change News. He's lived in tent encampments before and is currently experiencing homelessness, so he'll be giving us a perspective as someone who has lived and currently lives this experience. We also have Anne Lozerfo, who is with, she's the directing attorney with Columbia Legal Services and heads the project that focuses on basic human needs. And also joining us is Councilmember Sally Bagshaw, who represents the 7th District. And Councilmember Bagshaw also chairs the Human Services and Public Health Committee. So I'm going to jump right into it. We don't have a ton of time. There's a lot of stuff to discuss. Buddy, I want to start with you. We just saw an encampment dismantled, people's belongings thrown into dump trucks. You have lived in places like this, and I first of all want to hear from you, what went through your mind as you watched that?
Well, it was, you know, I couldn't help reflect back on the encampments that I've been in where either the city or the state have just come walking in and usually will give you a notice for a short period of time, and it really doesn't matter what time limit, because if you got no place to go, then you got no place to go. And to have state or local officials to just come in and take everything that you've possibly owned or everything that you've owned and just throw it away like a piece of trash is just, you know, it's just very appalling that we have local officials that can do that.
Yeah, and I want to look at some of the similarities. Like you just touched on, this is not something that just happens in Indianapolis. There are some striking similarities between the situation we just witnessed in that documentary and some of the things that have gone on in Seattle, especially in the area under I-5 that is commonly known as the jungle. Buddy, what are some of the similarities that you saw watching that?
Well, one of the big similarities that I seen was the fact that officials that are elected into positions to supposedly take care of, you know, the most vulnerable in our society just don't care or appear just to be bewildered by the fact that these situations exist. The fact that they want to sweep it up underneath the rug and pretend like it doesn't happen is once again very appalling. These are situations, these are human beings, these are United States of America citizens that for whatever reason have fallen through the cracks, and be it bankruptcy or be it financially, I mean, we've gone through a few recessions since 1980, greater than the Great Depression, and they're still human beings that live up underneath this bridge or in the jungle or in any other encampment, and we're all entitled to be treated as human beings.
Councilmember Bagshaw, I'm hearing Buddy say there that he feels that some elected officials don't care, and we did hear one of the officers in that documentary refer to it as hide the homeless. As a representative of the city, what's your response to that concern?
Well, I will tell you that I think Buddy is right, that there are some people who don't care. But I will tell you that I do care. And it has been something that I have been fighting for, working for much of my career. But what I am really seeing, and I think I talked to you about this morning, Kate, is that we are seeing a change in our own elected officials and in our own mayor's office. Let me give you an example. A number of months ago, the mayor had announced that he was going to sweep underneath I-5. And a number of us, including my friend Ann and others, said that is absolutely impossible. We cannot do that for a number of reasons. First of all, as Buddy said, these are human beings. Secondly, they are our neighbors. And thirdly, it is a public health issue. If people don't have a place to go, I mean literally to go to the bathroom, and if they don't have a place to leave to go to, we're not making things any better at all. So over the last few weeks, I will say thank you to the mayor's office. Thank you to so many of you that are here in this audience for supporting me. We drafted a resolution. Ultimately, the resolution was adopted 9-0 by our council. The mayor signed it saying we are going to do something different underneath I-5. And I'm never using the term the jungle. I use the term I-5, the Duwamish Greenbelt. We are not animals living under there. So a number of the folks, and I will say almost two-thirds of the people that were there, have been offered assistance, have found other places to live, have provided the mental health or the addiction services. And just about 2 days ago, our mayor said that he is not going to remove anybody else underneath I-5 until we have a place to put them.
And Councilmember Bagshaw, to your point, the area under I-5 has been a little bit of break in tradition from the city's response, but the reality remains that outside of that area, there are still encampments that are being broken up. The term used by most advocates is swept. And I think that one of the questions that arises that we saw here and that arises in this city is, where do those people go? Where are they supposed to go? And Anne, I'd love for you to speak to how important it is for us to ask that question, and also, you know, do we have answers to that at the moment? Right.
And just to answer that question quickly, we don't have places for them to go. That's why I am personally working hard to make sure that there are spaces where people can have encampments, where they can have the work like what Cher is doing, so that they're self-managed encampments with toilets, with garbage cans, with places and spaces for them to stay with their partners, with their pets, and with their possessions.
Ann and Buddy, do you want to weigh in on that?
And I'd like to add one more thing to one of the similarities. As you may well have seen, and a point well made, that cleaning out the bridge and putting up a fence in no way solves the problem of homelessness. And faith-based organizations or a hall with a sea of mats for a temporary night of roof over your head is also not another. Solution to the problem.
We had mentioned there are many similarities in what we saw and what's happening here. There are also some differences, though. And in terms of the services available, the outreach, those kinds of things, what are the differences you see?
Well, there are some very good. Was that question for me?
I directed it to Anne, but Buddy, if you'd like to answer, we'd love to hear from you too.
Well, I can tell you this, and I will speak highly in regards to some of the efforts of Seattle, whereas, as you may well have seen in Indiana, they don't have any type of outreach. They have one mission that's a faith-based mission that really is usually looked at as a, because they deal with homeless people, they look like an authority or some type of an authoritative consultant on homelessness, and I'm here to tell you that they're not by any means. Their way of dealing with homelessness is to bring people into their mission, to their gospel, or whatever it may be. And I'm I am in no way shooting down the missions, okay? If you have spiritual beliefs and you want to join a mission and it's going to help you get out of homelessness, fine. But for the most and for the majority, it's not the answer as well. So some of the good things about Seattle is that there are some city-run shelters, but once again, all it is a hall with a sea of mats. It's not really a solution, and we need more.
I mean, it's a hall with a sea of mats, and what it doesn't provide is a home that allows for the kind of stability for people to actually break out of homelessness. And that's why with 537 sweeps minimum in 2013, there were just as many and even more sleeping outside in 2016, and thousands more neighborhood complaints about folks outside. So the ongoing sweeps, I know there is some efforts to change that model, but the reality is, from what we're hearing from our clients, as the focus has moved away from I-5, it's now moving into the other areas of the city. And we need to remember that area under I-5 is about 15% of the unsheltered homeless. That leaves a lot of people out in the city that are still being swept.
So a number of weeks ago, Ann and I and a number of others went down to San Francisco to look at the Navigation Center. Navigation Center is a model of 24/7 shelter, and I'm completely convinced that, as Buddy and Ann have said, that the shelter that we have been funding over the years, where it's actually you come in, you line up, you queue up at 7 o'clock, you get in, you sleep on the mat, you're 12 inches away from your person next to you, no places to store your stuff, no places to have your pet or your partner, that's not the right model. The 24/7 Navigation Center, I think, is going to provide us better options, and the mayor has just announced and agreed that we will have our first one set up here in Seattle by the end of the year. Now, that model is something where people can come in, and again, the pets, the partners, their possessions, they can bring them with them. They will have the opportunity to be working for permanent housing, and that's what we know is necessary. And clearly, we don't have the number of units available right now that city-owned to get people in. That's why we need to use all of the tools that we've got, whether it is our landlord liaison project. You've seen modulars now, some of these tiny houses. We're not talking about just those alone, but actual modulars with water, with cooking, with space that would be available, even large enough for a small family. This is something that we can get set up within months. It's what we need to be doing is looking at all of our tools. Leaving people outside on the street is just not an acceptable model. Getting people inside with a roof on their heads where they can get stabilized is the direction we have to go.
Buddy, for someone who's homeless currently, who's lived outside, who's lived in these camps, what would that mean in terms of if they're telling you to go and suddenly there is somewhere for you to go, there is housing?
Well, I can't even begin to tell you how important it is. Well, first of all, it would be music to my ears and most others. But I can't even begin to tell you how important it is not only to have housing, but also to be able to maintain housing. And I think that it's important for most taxpayers and the citizens to understand that without the other resources that go along with some kind of housing or a base of operation for an individual to get into and some type of job training, we are a conglomerate of high-tech businesses. We got Amazon, we got Boeing, we got Microsoft. We got a wealth of business going on here that should be willing to incorporate also some type of training or some type of skill training or something to put people that are willing or contingent upon going back to work and giving back to society as well. I think these are important. Now, not everybody can go back to work.
And these are all great ideas, and all the things the city is doing around the Navigation Center and a lot of the other efforts are really fantastic, but all of this is going to take time, and so that still leaves the question as to what we're going to do with the folks who are outside during that period of time until things can come into place. And interestingly, as negative as the city of Indianapolis looked in this movie, Indianapolis is the only city or any government entity whatsoever in the country that has passed laws protecting the homeless from sweeps. The Indianapolis in February 2016 put into law a city county ordinance saying that encampments cannot be removed unless the folks in the encampment are offered transitional or permanent housing. So somebody did finally have balls, and somebody did finally do something.
And you've touched on something there that I think is a really important part of this, and that's not just looking at the similarities and what's gone on in the past, but looking forward to what we can do as a city and some of the solutions that might actually make a difference in the situation here. Councilmember Bagshaw, the ordinance they passed in Indianapolis sounds like it would have some serious protections for the homeless population here. What's your thought on doing that in Seattle?
Well, we've actually seen that ordinance, and I have drafted an ordinance that is paralleling the Indianapolis ordinance. We are looking at a number of spaces right now where people can go, where they can be. One of the issues that I continue to have with the mayor's office is that where we have places for people to be, they have to have garbage cans. They have to have porta-johns. We need to have needle repositories there. It is crazy, in my mind, for us to say to somebody, you can't be here, but you can be over there, but we don't provide just the basic things for people to have a even semblance of life and a normal life. If there are truly 4,505 people that we counted outside and under, whether you call it under-sheltered or improperly sheltered this last January, I am working with our colleagues in King County and in the state and with our federal governments to say we have got to be in alignment. The city ourselves invested $47 million this year in making places better for people that are outside right now. And you look at $47 million and you're saying, are we getting $47 million of value? Are people $47 million better off than they were? I want to be able to say next year at this time that we've got people inside, that people are sheltered, that people have the services that they need, that they're getting better, that we've got drug treatment on demand, whether it's buprenorphine, whether it's more methadone clinics, and it's not just in Seattle, but it is countywide. And it's not just countywide, but look at our quad counties around here, to think about Snohomish and Pierce and Kitsap County, where we are working as a unit and as a region to take care of people who are homeless. It is absolutely unacceptable to me that we continue to do business like we have been doing.
Buddy, what do you see as a solution? What would you like to see?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I think that the first part of the question I already answered. The second part of the question would go like this. I think that, you know, we can't always burden taxpayers or people with funds to try to do everything. I think it's almost contingent upon successful businesses within this community that operate and do business successfully in this community to put up probably either a bond or some type of an investment within the community for the most vulnerable in the community. I think by, you know, putting up some funds as far as getting people trained or within their business, I think is certainly an investment where eventually homelessness will go away. I also feel that there's also the third part of that question is also we have people that are mentally incapacitated. We have people with mental illness. We have people that not necessarily are drug addicts because that they went into a, you know, before they became homeless, but they became drug addicts and alcoholics during their homelessness, therefore become somewhat mentally capacitated. These are very vulnerable people, and it's just not right that they can't get the type of help or that nobody cares. So on a three-point answer to that question, I think housing as a mainstay, a base of operation. I think resources from successful businesses around the community that are obviously succeeding because of the community, I feel in a way obligated to give back. I feel that the people that are receiving that should be giving back as well. And I also believe that there should be some interpretation as to people that have mental incapacities and physical limitations.
And would you like to speak to some solutions you'd like to see?
What was it? Sorry, can I hear?
Any solutions that you would like to see?
I would agree with everything Buddy had to say and just add that the state is looking more and more at connecting housing with mental health services and really recognizing that health, both physical health and mental health, start and need housing for support. And so with those funds, hopefully, going forward, there can be better efforts in our state around mental health. We are the 47th worst state, I believe, in mental health services. I suspect that has a lot to do that has a lot to do with the kinds of problems we're seeing in our city and county.
So what I would like to see done by the end of this year, and we are working hard, I would say literally, this is my focus in my committee right now. I want 1,000 more places for people to live, and that's not just in the city of Seattle, but in King County wide, where they've got roofs over their head, they've got doors that shut, they've got places for their possessions. I want to see drug treatment on demand, because that's going to make a big difference. Again, whether it's more methadone, whether it's bupe, whether it is a doctor prescribed, but that people have options. And lastly, just like Ann was saying, and Betty, we need beds for those that have behavioral problems, mental health problems, where they can get the support they need, but also the rest they need, and the doctors that are overseeing them. There are opportunities now for us to take advantage of the state and federal money. We've got to have that in those places in place and planned and ready to go. I met with Frank Chopp last week about this. I've met with our federal delegation. We can do this. We cannot sit around on our hands. We've got to make those three things happen: more housing, the drug treatment on demand, and more mental health beds. And there's no reason why we cannot do that.
We have just about a minute left until I'm going to turn over the questions to you, because I know that you're all here because you're inquisitive and you want to learn more. What I would like to end on is just, Buddy, very quickly, what do you want people to know about you and about other people who are homeless in Seattle?
Well, one, and most importantly, I'd like to have most people understand that although people may be homeless, we are all human beings, and we're not animals. Sometimes we're put into situations, or we enter situations that we, you know, just for the fact or lack of a better word, sometimes existing and you're always on survival mode, it may seem like that people don't care or that the homeless people don't give a shit about anything else but themselves. And unfortunately, that's not true. There are a lot of people that are within these encampments that spend a lot of time helping out other people in the encampments, and it takes a lot out of you. A lot of these camps are self-managed. We take care of domestic violence cases. We take care of people that with drug addictions and also alcohol, addictions. And sometimes we don't make it out of the encampment in the course of a day, because between that and trying to figure out where your next meal or how you're going to make a buck comes around, the day's gone. What most people take for granted that they can do in their home for within an hour might take a homeless person 4 hours. Wash your clothes, take a shower, bus it around, stuff like this. So just remember, we're human beings, we're not animals, and most importantly, most of us want to give back.
Thank you, buddy. We have about 20 minutes to take questions from the audience. I have got a whole pile up here. We also have mic captains, so if someone would like to stand up and speak, raise your hand and the mic captains will come to you. Before we move on, though, I would like to mention that we have an advocate in the audience, Hallie, who is able to speak with people. If there's anyone here experiencing homelessness or anyone who has questions, she is here and she is available if you would like to talk to her, so just know that. I'm gonna kick off the questions with something that I think a lot of people here probably want to know, and Buddy, I'm going to direct this to you. The question is, if we wanted to help, what would be the first step?
Well, I think the best help that anybody can give would be to give a homeless person a job with sustaining wages, a place to live. I think if you got an extra room or, a job that you could use somebody in, I'd start there. I mean, that's really a solution to ending homelessness. Now, if you can do that on a large scale, I believe that would be a big bite into homelessness. Along too for the people that are out there currently, I think laws need to be imposed that are going to treat people, not as criminals, but as people that are just struggling to get up to the next rung in life.
And I'm going to direct this question to you. Someone in the audience has asked, what are the basic needs of homeless people on the streets?
What are the
basic needs of homeless people on the streets?
Well, housing. What people really need is a place from which they can feel safe and feel stable, a place where the mentally ill can feel settled enough that they're able to keep appointments, that they're able to follow a treatment plan, a place where people aren't so miserable that they are turning even more to drugs and alcohol. I think, especially with the youth population, there is a huge increase in the amount of drug use and alcohol use once youth go onto the street that they did not have before they went to the street. So What people really need is a place where they can pull their lives together and think about how to become healthy mentally and physically again, how to feel human again. And what they really need is a recognition from all of us who are lucky enough to have housing that everything that we get to do and we take as a matter of course is something that a homeless individual may do that we criticize. The going to the bathroom, using a water faucet, having a beer on a Saturday afternoon. We need to recognize that all these things are things that we all get to do in our houses, and we need to accept that homeless people are going to be doing them outside. We need to have sympathy, and we need to ask hard questions. When we hear people say, we cleared out an area of the city and we offered services, what were those services? Were they mats on a floor of a gym for some unspecified period of time, or were they actual solutions?
Excellent.
Councilmember Bagshaw, I'm going to direct a question to you, and then I think we should take a question from someone in the audience, so if our mic captains could go ahead and find somebody who would like to speak with us. But I have a question here that says, you said rapid rehousing requires city-owned units. How does the city budget for buying and acquiring those units? And how can the public, the voters, play a role in that?
Well, thank you for asking that question. You know about the housing levy that's coming up in November. I'm not sure whether...
August.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you. Coming up in August 2nd. You are so right. Thank you so much. Oh, my God. It's not that it's not on my brain, right? No, I'm not sure that Wayne Barnett, our ethics officer, is here. So I'm always at that point where they say, well, you're not supposed to be advocating for things that are on the ballot. So let me tell you this. Should you vote yes on the housing levy, which is coming up August 2nd, thank you, Allison, there is millions and millions of dollars in that housing levy that will go for the kinds of housing that we're talking about, affordable, permanent supportive housing for people who need it. There is money that will go into the landlord liaison project. There is money that we can use to help people get stabilized. So it's a flexible funding model. So I can't publicly advocate on behalf of it, but I think you know where I stand. other monies that are available. As I said, $47 million that we spent this year. The county has their Best Starts for Kids that was passed. If we get our Medicaid, our 1115 Medicaid waiver, there is statewide $1.5 billion that can come to things like the mental health beds. These are monies that we know are available or within our reach. And as Betty said, too, we have private individuals now that are stepping up, whether it was Travelodge with Amazon, whether it's the work, the millions of dollars that Paul Allen Foundation announced. You know, some people criticize saying it's a drop in the bucket. I say thanks to the philanthropists that are getting started, and let's look for others that are willing to support.
And I agree with that.
Mic captains, do we have someone? All right. And if you would like to direct your question to a particular panelist, go ahead.
Oh, you're holding the mic. Thank you. Sorry. That was confusing. Actually, I think I'm going to briefly not ask a question, but elaborate. I want to make sure that everybody here knows that the Seattle housing levy that Councilmember Bagshaw referenced is on the August 2nd ballot, and only on the August 2nd ballot. They're being mailed out on Friday. And homeless people, as well as other people who need housing, people who are interested in this issue, should not only consider voting yes on the levy, which is the last item on your ballot, but should consider coming to see me at the end of this to ask how you can volunteer to make sure that we do renew the housing levy. It's 7 years worth of funding. I also want to augment the question that was posed to Councilmember Bagshaw about how does the city budget and fund. Well, guess what? We, the public, and the taxpayers have a role in the city budget. And in fact, along with Real Change and many other organizations, the Coalition on Homelessness is taking a very active role in this year's budget process. So if you're interested in having a coordinated voice to speak up for additional services as well as housing, I think this would be a wonderful opportunity to come put your name on the list and partner with us to make sure that our city's budget reflects the values of the people in this room.
Now, stand up so people can see you, Allison. No offense on your size. Just so you wave to people up there so they can see.
I'll be by the door.
Now, folks, I'm Australian, so I can be a little thick sometimes, but what I'm getting here is that people like the housing levy. So just in case that wasn't clear, I saw some more hands raised, so if our mic captains could get another question.
You know, I would like everybody to think of the consequences after we find homeless people a place to live, because not everybody has a social net to keep these people housed. And an incident took place last month that I really would like to have you people really, really listen up to. It was a newspaper article in last month's Everett Herald, and I'm going to read it out loud the best way I can possibly read it, because it's the most gruesome thing I've ever dealt with in my entire life, and I'm going to read it. A woman fell to her death Sunday night from the 9th floor of the Broadway Plaza in Everett. A caretaker from the apartment complex, which serves seniors and adults with disabilities, called 911 around 10 p.m. A police officer began CPR on the woman, 27. Everett Police Sergeant Mary Jane Hacker said when the medics took over, there was no sign of life. The woman was taken to Snohomish County Medical Examiner's Office, which will try to determine the cause of manner of death. The caretaker told the police the woman had been acting paranoid before the fall. Well, this person was my friend. She helped me watch my vehicles, and she took the death by going to the hard concrete below, and if there was some kind of a social net in this system to help out those that are down and out on their luck, I believe that this person wouldn't have died to the concrete below. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, and I'm very sorry to hear that. Buddy, I'd like to direct what I think we're hearing here is a question to you of how do people maintain their newly found housing or some sort of a support network if they are able to get into housing?
Well, you know, and I remember speaking before Sally Bagshaw many years ago when we were first proposing, Nicola Carter and Michael Bryant had proposed the homeless encampment ordinance, and the city council allocated $500,000 to displace Nicholsville, and a lot of people got housing. And see, this was a great thing. The unfortunate part of the housing issue was people with mental illness and other areas of addiction also got into housing, but they didn't have the type of resources available other than, I believe, UGM, which was the focal point of dispensing housing at the time. Whether or not if they followed up on people with mental illness, or it was at best questionable if they did anything at all, if you weren't going to go into their disciple, their program or whatever, what type of other remedies they had was at best questionable. So, like I had said before, housing, yes, is the basic need, or some type of structured environment where you can get the type of help that you need. We've done this before in the past with a maximum amount of success, but it also has to have the resources to, like jobs and job training, to also be successful. And, you know, in such incidences where people get housing, but they don't get, the type of medical attention that they need, or the type of job training, or the ability to go get a job to maintain housing, is more or less like, well, in the wind.
We're talking about investment and being able to maintain help for people. I have a question here. What barriers are there with business and industry investment in housing and helping the homeless? And Anne or Sally, I'm wondering if one of you would be willing to talk about that.
I just didn't hear your question, Kate.
It's, what are the barriers to businesses and industry investment in housing and helping the homeless?
The barriers to business being involved?
Well, I'm beginning to see a lot more businesses recognizing that the health of the city depends upon them investing. And so whether it's Mr. Valdez up there helping us get more affordable housing, get a higher density in every neighborhood with the infrastructure that is needed, whether it's transportation or schools, that businesses are recognizing that having people unwell and on the street without housing does not contribute to the overall livability of the city. And I don't care whether you take it from the moral standpoint, which is it is not right to leave people on the street alone and by themselves, or whether you look at it and say, I want to build a city that is cleaner and a place where everybody wants to live. Take your pick. What we need to do is to resolve as a city, as a community, that we're going to get people in housing and we're going to have healthy places for everybody to live. And that is a safe place and it is a healthy place for all of us. So I'm thinking, contrary to this, what I saw in this movie, a lot of the film was taken in 2013, and there's been a big change, and I have experienced and seen the change in just 3 years of a change of attitude of how people are approaching others on the street. We still have a long way to go, and neighborhoods have a long way to go to realize that every neighborhood is going to be helping us. Every neighborhood's going to take their fair share. And how can we be involved? So it's not just limited to businesses, it's limited to our nonprofits, and it is really including every one of us to looking for ways on how we can help.
Can I just jump in on the barriers to businesses getting involved and housing developers? The biggest barriers to the work that is being proposed by developers and private investment is actually neighbors. It's actually citizens of the city saying, we don't want low-income housing here, we don't want density here, we don't want a place for homeless people here. So there really aren't legal barriers necessarily for what people want to do. It's actually citizens of Seattle saying, we don't want this happening here. It's not everybody, but it's some people. Some loud voices.
Yeah, and I would just say thanks to Anne for bringing that up. What all of us can do is to let our neighbors know that We want to be an inclusive city. We have values that everybody is going to have a place to live and that every neighborhood is going to include all of us. And I think that that's a voice, all of our voices is something that the mayor has heard, but it doesn't hurt to tell him again. And it doesn't hurt to tell every neighborhood council and every neighborhood association, we are an inclusive city. We're going to lead the charge on the West Coast to say people are welcome here and we're going to find places for people to work, to live, and as you've said, to encourage businesses to help people, whether they're internships or apprenticeships, and I'm working with the labor unions to say there is a place for everybody to be included. Your voices are needed to remind others that we are a city that is not going to throw people away.
Yeah, just about out of time here, but I see you, buddy, raising your hand, so I'm going to let you finish it up for us.
And one more thing as well. Although the Real Change Organization is a small grassroots newspaper, most people and most business owners have to understand that these are people selling the newspaper because it's really all that they can do at this point in time. So don't throw them out in front of your store and tell them to beat it because you think they're panhandling. They're only out there trying to make a living and an honest buck. And I say buy a paper.
I want to say thank you to all of our panelists. I have a whole heap of questions here that we didn't get to, and I apologize for that. KUOW is interested in continuing conversations like these, so if you're on Facebook, please consider joining our discussion group, which is called Ask Seattle's Homeless Group. Anyone may ask a question, but only people who have experienced homelessness are going to give responses. So the group is called Ask Seattle's Homeless Community. We would love to continue the conversation there, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.